I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm tired of hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, all you motherfuckers.
Politics, politics. Humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Art Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hi, my name's Bart. Welcome to Show 55, Bart Cop Radio, seen on BartCop.com, heard on the Bart Cop Radio Networks. And boy, do we have an odd show for you today. I'll tell you what, they're all a little bit different, but this one is downright funny. It's been almost 2 weeks since my last show, and for about a week of that, I had no voice. Once my voice got back, oh, you should have seen me on Wednesday. First rant I think you're going to hear is a Wednesday rant. But after I ate all the prescription medicine the doctor gave me, then I started eating these NyQuil pills and the Actifeds and doing the nose spray and stuff. None of that worked, so I went and sat in a boiling hot tub for about an hour and a half. And after an hour and a half, I could begin to breathe out my nose, so I thought, aha, I have a chance. So I ran in here, grabbed a newspaper, started spewing everything I could as fast as I could before my nose closed up again. I know that's a little more information than you needed to hear, but trust me, when your sinus blows up, all you can do is go crazy. So finally, a week later, I get some semblance of health back, and then Tommy took off to some short pants thing in San Jose. So this is going to be the first show that's all Bart. I know that's scary. Don't turn off. There'll be some growing pains in this. And the only reason I mention that is because I don't want Tommy to get the blame. This is all Bart, so hang on. Could be worse. And just think, as bad as 55 is going to be, boy, by the time we get to 65, boy, it'll be so much better. So let's get going. Let's see, it's been so long I forgot what to do next. Oh, yeah, that's right. A shot of Chinako. Oh, it tastes so fine. I can taste the apple. It's got a little wood to it. Not that kind of wood. It's got a little wood, little oaky flavor in it. Ah, we like that. Okay, so much to do. Let's see, what button do I hit next? Well, it's Wednesday afternoon. I'm recording this 5 days after my awful sinus attack. Just spent about an hour and a half in the hot tub, which is a bathtub without water in it. And my nose is temporarily clear, so I thought I'd record a little bit, get something in the can, try to get a show put together, if I can remember how to do it. I'm reminded of a thing I saw in the paper. It's been a couple of weeks, but it's still relevant. Right after NaziCon 2004, Fox News took out an entire page in USA Today. I don't know what that costs. I'll bet it costs $100,000, maybe $200,000. And they took out this page so they could brag how they beat CNN and all those little guys, MSGOP and CGOP and them others, in debate coverage. Which figures, because if you're going to watch NaziCon, you're going to want to watch it on the Nazi network. It just makes sense. But it struck me. Oh, they got a, seemed like they got a 0.9 and CNN got a 0.5. So, gee, what is that? Almost a million homes? Big job, Fox. But what struck me about it was they claim, oh, we're number one in news reporting. Turn to us. We're number one. We're the most trusted. People turn to us because we're number one. We're number one. You got to listen to Fox because we're number one. We're the biggest. We're the greatest. Now, I'll be damned if the next day, one of them radio Nazis was whining on and on and on, you know how they are, about how the media was keeping their message out, how the dominant media, liberal, elite, whatever little slogans they got for Bush's media, were keeping some story hidden. This was before Dan Rather, but keeping some big story hidden and they couldn't get it out and it was being suppressed by the liberal, dominant media elite, yeah, yeah, yeah. And just makes you wonder, how can they be number one and oppressed at the same time? How can they be powerless to get their message out and be number one at the same time? It seems to make no sense, but when have the Nazi bastards ever had to make any sense? All they got to do is get up there and spew lies, and the stupid people buy it. And that makes me a little bit angry, but I'll get over it. But just remember, at the same time they're bragging they're number one, they're also whining that the liberals are blocking them from getting their message out. Would somebody explain, please? The second thing I heard, Rush Limbaugh, and it was great for him to remind me because I forgot, but it was about a year ago that he was fired from football because he was too much of a Nazi and he was costing the networks too much money because they can't afford to have an actual Nazi right on the air with their emblem behind it. ESPN had to fire him because he went after Donovan McNabb, who seems like at the time it was 3 years in a row he brought the Phillies to the playoff, and I think he made it again last year. I forget. It's been a long time. But here's Rush screaming at McNabb that he's such a horrible quarterback, but the media likes him because he's black. That's the only reason. Typical Rush. He's got to drag race into it. He can't finish a sentence without using the N-word. Everything is about race. Everything is about race to Rush. That's all he's got, is his little hatred for the black man, the gay man, the whatever. Any minority you can find, Rush has to hate the guy because that's how he made his hundreds of millions of dollars. What's he getting paid? $28 million a year? That's $2.5 million a month? That's pretty good. But he works weekdays, so less than 25 days, so he's getting, what, $100,000 per show? Is that right? My math is as foggy as my brain is today. Oh, please, Lord, let my sinuses clear up. But the reason why I brought that up, Rush told his people, they had to be these people. Rush was talking about how great election night was going to be when all the big landslide comes in. And so some callers said, Rush, are you going to be on TV last year? They said, Rush, are you going to be on TV on election night this year? Because remember back in 2000, you were on all the networks? Well, seems like he was on Tim Russert's show because Russert idolizes the vulgar pig boy. Russert wants to be the vulgar pig boy so much. Oh, a little sidebar. The guy that's taken over for Dan Rather, what's his name? Matt? No. I forget what his name is, but he idolizes the pig boy. We're going to go from Dan Rather to his replacement, who loves the vulgar pig boy. Any chance he's got to say something nice about Rush, he does. And Rush is of such a poor ego that if anyone says anything about him, pro or con, Rush has to mention it the next day and go on and on and on about how he was in the media. Now, see, it's a little different. If someone mentioned BarCup.com, I might call to someone's attention because I'm absolutely nobody. In any small increment, I can claw my way up the ladder. Yeah. It's fun to mention it to people because who knows how long it'll be before we get another one. But here's the vulgar pig boy making $100,000 a day, making whatever. Here's the vulgar pig boy making all these multi-millions, signing his $280 million contract to be a Nazi bastard on the radio and scream insults at Chelsea and blacks and gays. And he's friends with the president, and he's the leader of the Republican Party. And for him to go on bragging and bragging about, oh, look, someone mentioned my name. Well, yeah, geez, pig boy, you're a household name. Everybody hates you. That's why ESPN had to can you. But anyway, the caller calls in, Rush, are you going to be on TV election night? And Rush says, well, no, I don't think I will be this year because I'm a I'm an unpaid consultant for the Bush campaign. Now, that reminded me that, in truth, they're not going to have Rush on the networks because, for the same reason ESPN can't have him on, he's a proven Nazi racist bastard. They know if they ask Rush to come on a show, he's liable to show up in white sheets with a hood over his head. So they can't have that. So to inoculate himself from the Rush, you're not going to be on this year because you're a Nazi bastard charge, Rush probably called the Bush campaign and said, would you mind if I listed myself as an unpaid advisor? Because obviously Rush's show is listened to by the Bush people, and so if Rush comes up with an idea, the Bush people might listen to it. So Rush says, since I'm an unpaid advisor to the president, the networks probably won't have me on, which is horse hockey, because you know election night's going to have on Bagala, they're going to have on Carville, they're going to have on Joe, what's his name now, speaking for Kerry? Boy, my mind is just as blank as it can be. But they're going to have all these paid political guys on television on election night, but no pig boy. And the truth is, because nobody likes a Nazi bastard, but Rush is spinning it as, since I'm a consultant, they won't let me on. Well, Rush, you've been caught. You were a liar. You're a racist. And plus, pig boy, it was your dream job. I heard you. I've listened to every broadcast. Well, not every, but most broadcasts since maybe 91. And it's always been your dream job to get to the NFL. If you could just get in football. Oh, you would give it all up if you could get in football, because football was your life. You had football in your blood, and you just loved football, and it just meant everything to you. And finally, you got hired into football. Then what did you do? What did you last? 5 weeks before you started bringing race. Everything's about race to Rush Limbaugh and the Republican Party. It's always about race. Rush couldn't talk about football without talking about race, because that's what he is. And it was fitting, I thought, that the vulgar pig boy got fired out of his dream job because he is such a Nazi bastard. So, with any luck, we won't be seeing Rush election night. Oh, please, God, make it a good night for the Democrats, because we need this one. We can't lose another one. Please, God, make that happen. But in closing, sorry, vulgar pig boy, and sorry to Fox News, who, despite being number one, can't get their message out. Now, isn't that sad? Here we go now with some more praise of Kerry that might at first sound like a criticism, but it's not. This is praise. Editorial, USA Today, September 21. Kerry confronts Bush on war, but his solution is murky. Our view. While Senator opens himself to flip-flop charge, criticism is on the mark. For months, John Kerry's tried to fend off complaints from fellow Democrats that he has failed to expose Bush's Iraq policies as failures. Kerry responded forcefully Monday, blaming Bush for the mess that has been created in Iraq, but he did so at the price of reinforcing charges he is a flip-flopper. In a scathing attack, he said Bush has committed colossal failures in judgment and failed to tell the truth. Now, that is plain speaking. Senator, where have you been for the last 200 days? Where has your plain speaking been? Now you are here, and we're grateful to have it. But Jesus, would be so much of a different race if you hadn't given Bush a 25-mile head start in the race. But anyway, back to Kerry added in a speech devoted to the Iraq war that he would not have backed an invasion had he known Saddam didn't have weapons of mass destruction. Harsh as it may come across, Kerry's criticism is an accurate indictment of Bush's decision to take the nation to war under mistaken reasons without adequate plans and resources to achieve his goals of creating a prosperous democratic Iraq. Bullshit, that was never Bush's goal. His goal was to get even with Saddam for his daddy and make a few hundred billion in the process. They're stealing $90 million a day. Nobody has argued with me on that. I don't know that they have the venue to do that, but oil right now, $46 a barrel. If they're pumping 20 million barrels a day, there you go. That's $90 million that they're stealing every day. And every time there's a beheading, that's an excuse for the BFEE to steal another 30 days worth of oil. You know, oh, we don't have any oil this month. Because remember that beheading 80 miles west of Baghdad? That's why there's no oil coming from that entire Texas-sized country. A country the size of Texas producing oil. And if there's a beheading or a bombing in downtown Baghdad, then all that oil goes to Kuwait and it gets assigned to the BFEE and it's unaccounted for. And when they say, where the hell's the oil? They say, insurgents blew up a pipeline. There are no reporters that are willing to leave their hotel to verify that, but you can trust us because we're oil men in the White House. And remember, evil men would not kill or lie to take over the world. That's a fact. Evil men would not do that because there's a code among evil men that you must play by the rules and you must not cheat, lie, steal, or kill to take over the planet. Of course, all that's bullshit. The BFE has taken over the planet. They don't mind killing. They will do anything because they have all the power in the world is extremely corrupting. Remember what Lincoln said. And the BFEE now, they control the gold and the oil until the end of time. Right now, they control the military, which enables them to control everything. At some point, if we get lucky, if the Diebold machines work, if the Democrats decide to stop allowing the Republicans to steal elections, if they decide to stand up and say, hey, we're not going to let you do it this time, then maybe the Democrats might get back in control. The BFEE is still going to control all the oil and all the gold, but at least we'll, if we can get the military back, that'll be a huge thing, because then we can start holding other, we can hold the guilty accountable again if we have the military. But as long as Bush commands the military, we in trouble. Okay, back to this deal here. Yeah, yeah, achieve his goal of creating a prosperous Democratic Iraq. 18 months after the invasion, a worsening insurgency has left the country in chaos. Still, by waiting so late in the campaign to confront Bush. Now see, I'm not the only one saying it. And not to toot my own horn, but I said it effing first. All these other, everyone, the whole country now, the newspapers, the TV whores, the Democrats, they all agree it's time for Kerry to wake up. And, you know, I wanted him to wake up in June and July, but no. Bush is 25 miles down the road, now everybody agrees it's time for Kerry to wake up. Still, by waiting so late in the campaign to confront Bush at a time when he appears to be slipping in some polls, Kerry looks as though he's shifting for political expediency, the very image Republicans are trying to burnish in voters' minds. Well, sadly, whether he said it or not, the world heard Kerry say that he would have done the exact same thing Bush did. So now when he comes out saying the Iraqi war is a bad idea, yes, they're going to label him flip-flopper. But geez, would you rather have the flip-flopper that wants to fix Iraq, or do you want to have the idiot flip-flopper in there who you know is just going to rape and steal Iraq? This whole Iraq thing is not going away. We're going to have to fix it, and Kerry can do it. Bush can't. In fact, it says, Kerry was among the 77 senators who voted in 2002 to authorize the war. As recently as August, he said he still would have voted the same way even if he'd known Saddam had no WMD. Predictably, Bush jumped on the latest flip-flop Monday, accusing Kerry of continuing his pattern of twisting in the wind. Kerry's explanation is that the vote was necessary to give Bush the means of, yeah, yeah, he's always got a way to nuance it, but you can't nuance with stupid people. We had a semi-argument, I think it was on Tuesday's page. Do we want our candidate to dumb down to reach the voters? A lot of people think no. I say yes. Voters are very, 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 very stupid. That's why you can't explain to them in an intelligent manner what you got to do. You got to say, it's Bush's war, and he messed it up. Now, see, the stupid people can understand that. That's why plain talking is going to win this election. Please, God, we got to win this election. We don't have much of a choice. If we lose this one, my God, Bush, another thing Kerry might mention if he has the time, that if Bush gets elected again, what are we going to lose? Three Supreme Court justices? And then we're going to end up with Slappy and another Slappy and another Slappy and Scalia and another Scalia and another Scalia. Oh, my God. What are we going to do with six Scalias on the Supreme Court? Goodbye, Roe versus Wade. Goodbye, any kind of corporate accountability. You talk about tort reform. If Bush wins this next election, you're going to see some tort reform. You go to the doctor with a sore foot, and he puts you in the hospital, going to do surgery and cut something out of your foot, and they do brain surgery instead and cut your brain out. Well, they're going to give you $250,000. And if you don't like that, you can just petition God for a new brain. Hey, that's the Republican. They're going to fix everything for us. Oh, we just got to win this election. Thank you, Mr. Kerry, for waking up. We all need to get on this bandwagon now. We need to beat it to death. Oh, America, please. We got a guy here that can fix things. We can't keep going down this same deal where up is down and black is white and failure is good and war is peace. We cannot continue down this road. Kerry can fix that. Bush can't. It's really that simple. And I'm so looking forward to these debates. Did you see Kerry? Oh, I hope that'll sure make it in the show. But Kerry on Letterman was very good. He was damn good. Very natural, very confident, very presidential. Dave, I even thought, didn't really try to trip him up, but Dave threw him an occasional curve, and Kerry just took it. He didn't. A lot of times in that position, someone throws you a curve, and you have a tendency to say the first thing you think of. But Kerry, like Clinton, you know, Dave would pop him with a surprise, and he would stop for a second, he'd think, and he gave a real damn good presidential, meaningful answer with some gravitas. So, yes, Kerry is back. He's in fine form. We're heading into the battle now. We're going into the big moments here. We got a good fighter on our side. This is not lost. If we do good in the debates, if America has a little common sense, and remember, the polls could be very, very wrong. This deal about 169 million cell phones that nobody's calling. Have you gotten a poll call on your cell phone? Rumor has it you have not. So all the people have got some. Had someone write me and say, but Bart, not all the young people. Wait, start over. I have a cell phone and a land phone. If I didn't have an alarm on Barkout Manor, I wouldn't need a land phone. I would have only the cell phone. I mean, why the hell would anyone want to pay for two phones? Young kids living in an apartment don't have a lot of possessions. They might not see the need to have an alarm at their house. So there's a whole lot of people just don't have a land phone. So they'll never be called. So this guy writes me and says, but Bart, a lot of these youngsters are Republicans. You got to understand that. And I do understand that. But if you're 17 or 18 or 19 or 20, no matter how much you like Bush, are you ready to go to Iraq and die for Halliburton? That's going to be one of the, again, that'd be a good thing for Kerry to say. If you're under 25, remember there's a guy that was recently, about a month back, we had a provable story. It was in like a real newspaper, someone you could trust. They drafted a 65-year-old guy and a 68-year-old guy. The headline was Grandpa Gets Drafted or something like that. And not that they're drafting all 65 and 68-year-olds, but these guys were specialists. They were psychiatric stress specialists, kind of, you know, psychiatrist type of guys, because there's so many men in Iraq whose mind are being blown. They saw their best friend murdered before them. They've seen so much death and destruction. They've seen people bombed from, you know, their guts all over the street. I mean, there have been so much of that for so long. Constant shelling. Remember the old MASH TV show when Hawkeye and Hot Lips, they went on some dangerous mission out, you know, kind of in the field, and it just, the shells just kept coming and kept coming, and they weren't really hitting them, but just the idea of, think about that. Me and you don't have any idea what that's like. Think about just 24 hours of constant explosions, and you're always wondering, is the next one going to hit our tent? 24 hours of constant explosions, now multiply that by a year and a half. What's it like to go 500 days without a quiet day? 500 days. The latest was, this was Wednesday, but they said in the last few weeks, they're averaging 80 attacks a day. Now, you keep thinking, that's got to be a misprint. It must be 8 attacks a day. But no, they said there's 80 attacks a day. 80 car bombs, 80 sniper attacks, 80 whatevers, you know, but 80 attacks per day is the average. So 80 times 30, you're talking about, you know, 2,500 attacks a month. 2,500. Now, what the hell is that going to do to your brain? They say when you walk around the green zone in Baghdad, you got to keep your helmet on, your flak jacket on, because inside the green zone, you know, it's like this is the one area that we have complete control over. You still got to wear your helmet and your flak jacket and all that and pay attention, because the bad guy's going to strike any second. Jeez, let's build our entire future in that place. So anyway, we got constant explosions. The psychiatric problems over there are going to be so massive. At some point, these guys are going to be so glad to get back home. But you know what's going to happen? Now, multiply this. Say there's 150,000 guys over there. Let's say a third of them are going to come home. I'm not saying all stressed and et cetera, but a third of them, let's put a label jumpy on it. Now think, if you've heard nothing but multiple explosions every day for 500 days, and you come home and some kid pops a paper bag behind you, I mean, that's not going to be good. You might do duty in your pants, you might turn around and shoot the kid, you might burst out in tears, you may dive under a table like Bernard Shaw, anything could happen, but these people who have been living with constant 80 attacks a day, people have been living with these constant explosions and constant murders and constant, you know, here goes another car bomb, and here goes another 35 guys with arms and legs blown off. And you go through that day after day after day after day, and then finally get sent home. It's like, well, thank you, God, but, you know, the guy that's coming home is not the same guy that went over there. Here we go now. Think about the families. Mom, why is Dad acting so funny? Why is Dad such an asshole? Why is Dad exploding every time? You know, I dropped a fork. I thought Dad was going to kill me. There's going to be a whole lot of that multiplied by 50,000 or 100,000, or I don't know the numbers, but we got 130,000, 140,000 guys over there right now, and they're rotating in and out. So what is there, 200 to 250,000 that are rotating in and out? A quarter of a million people going to be a little on the crazy side, and, you know, I'm not trying to attack the vets, but, hey, you put anybody in a 80 attacks a day, 80 attacks a day, and they're living with that. For 90 days, 6 months, a year and a half, they're going to come back a little different. All because that idiot monkey wanted to steal that oil. The whole world told him, please don't do that. You've got no reason to do that. Please don't screw up and start this holy war in the Middle East where, you know, all these atomic weapons are now in play. Please don't do that. But no, the idiot monkey just had to have his oil. He just had to steal something that the other guy had. Let's hope Kerry can put an end to our nightmare.
You know I can't be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made a man,
a letter or two in the USA Today that I thought could use some comment. Here's one called Think of Our Troops. USA Today well points out in its editorial the failures of our Iraqi campaign, but then it states vaguely, with so much at stake in Iraq, a U.S. pullout is not an option. Close quotes. USA Today doesn't say precisely what is at stake. Why must we slog on with more than a dozen soldiers wounded or killed every damn day? I put in the damn. We bugged out of Vietnam, we bugged out of Lebanon, we bugged out of Somalia with no obvious damage to our nation except the humiliation of our leaders, comma, all three being Republican. Most Iraqis want us to leave. Many observers say our troops do more harm there than good. What damage exactly would our leaving quickly do balanced against the bloody price of staying on? Dan Lyons, Fort Collins, Colorado. And dumb as this sounds, I think I've read Dan Lyons' work before, because it always strikes me if a pro-Democrat letter makes it in the USA Today. But, you know, the guy's got a good point. How many lives are we going to waste before we pull out? It sure seems obvious that we're going to have to pull out, and we can either pull out and let the whole place go to hell, or we can pull out with the UN's help, but the UN's not going to help as long as Bush is the president. I am going to try real hard not to beat up Mr. Kerry this time because I can't afford it. You wouldn't believe. Subscriptions are down. There is a price for speaking the truth. In a different universe, I could pay that price, but I wish Mr. Kerry would more forcefully make the point that Iraq has three options. If Kerry wins, he can bring the UN in, and we can get out that way. If Kerry loses, Bush is going to go, have you heard this now? Oh, God, we got a bloodbath coming, a bloodbath like nobody has ever seen. Oh, my God, you're just not going to believe. And I'm not making this up 1%. These are facts I'm giving you, facts as I believe them. They say there are 30 cities or so where American troops are not allowed in. Now, can you believe we're occupying a country in 30 cities telling us to FO? So those 30 cities are on our list. We're not going to do anything about them now because Bush has an election coming up, and the last thing he needs is a massive increase in bloody bodies coming out of Iraq right before the election. So they're just sitting on that while the Iraqi insurgents pick us off five or so a day. As I speak this on Wednesday, we're losing an average of 3 men a day, no telling how many men a day are losing eyes, arms, legs, and their sanity, but we're losing an average of 3 lives a day, sometimes 5, sometimes 10, but at least 3 a day lately. So we're doing nothing, and we're just letting the bad guys pick us off and behead the contractors. Yeah, let's not forget that. And we're just sitting there. But if Bush wins this next election, they say Richard Clark, I probably have it in the pile somewhere, but Richard Clark was on Jon Stewart again Tuesday night, and he said the minute Bush wins that election, we're going to have a massive offensive in Iraq in the middle of November. So that means, my God, are we going to have 300 dead by the end of November? Think about it. Fallujah and Najif and all these towns that nobody, you know, you've heard the names, but every one of them is a massive stronghold for the bad guys that have come from all over. Little sidebar, why the hell can't they patrol the borders? We've got 150,000 men over there, and the borders are as porous as our border with Mexico. Why the hell bother to invade a country if we're not going to do it right? If Bush wins this election, he's going to take these towns one at a time, and we're going to have these monstrous body counts coming out of it. It is just going to be ugly as it can be. And everybody's going to say, damn, by the 1st of December, everybody's going to say, damn, I wish I'd voted for Kerry. So it would be nice if Mr. Kerry would more strongly make the point that the only way, okay, I was talking about there's 3 ways to get out of Iraq. We can say F it and walk away and let all the bad guys take over and, you know, hell with their oil money. They can produce an atomic bomb very, very soon. You offer anybody $100 million for an atomic bomb, you're going to get one. Or a billion, whatever the cost. You know, everybody's got a price. There's thousands of missing nukes in Russia. And if Zakharovy, that guy, if he's in charge of Iraq, and he would be, I assume, if we left, now he's in charge of the $100 million a day that Bush is stealing. So $100 million a day, 10 days go by, Zakharovy's got $1 billion. Now he's going to have a bomb. So we kind of pretty much can't do that. So we can't just leave. And if we leave Bush in charge, option number two is going to be a never-ending bloodbath. But option number three is if Kerry wins, the rest of the world will once again begin to cooperate with us, and then we can slowly pull out, you know, maybe they'll blow up the Germans and the Italians and the French and all that with the same zeal they're blowing up the Americans. But the thing is, everybody's got a little greed in them. The Republicans in France and Russia and China and Germany and Italy and all that. If we tell France, tell you what, you put in 30,000 troops, we'll let you have the cell phone contracts for the southern half, whatever, of the country. Fine. France is going to make a bunch of billions, so they're going to put their boys in to die. We tell Germany and Italy they can have, you know, this and that contract. See, right now, Bush and his buddies and Halliburton and Bechtel, all them, they're making all the billions. All these billions they're making. That's why the other people won't, the other countries won't help us, because they want a piece of the pie. If they're going to lose soldiers, they want a piece of the pie. And in some weird way, that's fair. I don't know how you trade. You know, a guy walks up and knocks on the Italian premier's door and says, tell you what, if you throw in 400 lives, we'll give you a contract for $3 billion. It's like, oh, okay, we got 400 young boys we can lose. Fine. But bottom line, they're not going to do that for Bush. They'll do that for Kerry. So assuming a bunch of people are going to die in Iraq in the next year, we can either make them all Americans or we can make them 15% Americans. Those are our options, thanks to the idiot who invaded for no goddamn reason. So, again, wouldn't want to beat up Mr. Kerry for not trying, but if he would more forcefully make the argument that our only chance to get out of Iraq ever, I mean ever as in the next 10 years, is to elect him in November, that would sure score some points, I think, with the voters. Now, if you disagree, send me a letter and tell me why, but please don't unsubscribe.